is Thursday, January 10th, LA Podcast. Scott Frazier, Alyssa Walker, and Hayes Davenport. We're releasing a little late this week. I was out of town. I was in India. I just got back around noon today. I am changed. I'm broken. I'm something less than a human. I feel terrible. I will either never sleep or only sleep for the rest of my life.
One or the other.
And you're wearing glasses. All of us are wearing our glasses. It must be a glasses day.
I had to wear glasses this entire trip because I showed up there and I realized I only brought six right eye contacts.
Oh, I've done that. Yeah. I've been there, but not in India.
It does kind of put together the whole disheveled thing you have going on.
Yeah, I'm wearing pajamas. It's a new year.
Well, we always wear pajamas to record this. I mean, let's tell the people right now.
But I did think about some LA stuff while I was there a little bit. It segues into a little bit of an LA story, which is going around India. I kind of felt like we talk on the show a lot about growth and bringing more people into the city and the forces that resist that. And going around parts of India, I kind of understood what they were afraid of in right. parts. There were, you know, you're just trying to navigate street in every city center I went to. There are cars and auto rickshaws and motorcycles allowed in there. And they're constantly like running into each other. There's dogs, there's cows, there's people. There are no sidewalks really. And the streets are pretty narrow. You're breathing in diesel fumes all the time. There are channels of wastewater running down like both sides of the street. Like it's like super unsanitary and super loud and smells really bad from the diesel fumes. And it made me conscious of that. I guess unchecked growth is not a great thing on its own. Emphasis always has to be on like sustainable growth, because you can't just like bring people into an area without creating the infrastructure to help it grow. So while we always make fun of the people who say like, oh, what are we gonna, we can't build this apartment building.
And you just became the chair of Fix the City
in Westwood because our sewers will overflow.
Water main that burst in Chinatown while you were gone.
I saw that. Oh my God. We are right to make fun of those people, but I don't think we can ignore issues of infrastructure and sanitation and things like that when it comes to adding more people. It was super overwhelming. You know, like you want to be like a good, like someone who loves cities and be like, oh God, that like it's so stimulating,
right.
This amazing place. But it was just like incredibly chaotic. And at some point I was just like, this is not good. All this smoke in the air is terrible. I came out
you had one of the worst smoke days ever, right? Were you in a big city when they had those really bad air alerts? Yeah.
I wasn't in Delhi, which did break the charts. But every day I was in Mumbai for a couple of days. Every day there is above like 200, is in like the very unhealthy category. I walked out in LAX and was like, I took like a deep breath. It was like the sweetest air I'd ever tasted in LA.
And that's jet fuel air.
Yes. So it is so nice to be back here. What did you guys get up to this week?
I can do the part two of my journey to the airport with two young children without a car.
Oh, because good. That's right.
Now that you've left us at LAX, I'll pick up from there.
Weren't you stuck in Colorado for a while?
Well, there was some snow. Yeah, that part was great. But so the airline did this thing where it said, your flight will probably be canceled. Can we rebook you? And you're like, okay. And then the flight actually wasn't canceled, but we still got to fly in a different day, which is fine. So we come back. So I took the flyaway, which I, you know, have always taken the flyaway by myself. This is the first time taking it with my whole family. Took the flyaway to LAX. It was such a great experience. We had no hassle. It got us there very fast. We walked right in, got on our plane. On the way home, we were at Terminal 7 and the flyaways kept passing us because by the time they get to Terminal 7, they're full.
Yikes.
So we see a few go by, and then there's a bunch of very angry people who try to like fight onto a Van Nuys flyaway.
I was going to say, are you just trying to get onto any of them?
Well, at this point, yeah. Now we're like, okay, we're just going to get on the Hollywood one and take the red line the other way. Not a huge deal because we're going, you know, same amount of stops basically from Union Station to Hollywood. We're right in the middle. So we get on a Hollywood one, get the last seats on the Hollywood one. The windows are all open and no one will close them. And it's 40 degrees on this day. Oh, you're nodding like you've been on this. You've been experienced this
one. Yeah.
It's not the nice like coach bus you have.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, we're like bouncing up in the air as we're going on the 110 flyover. And I feel like my children are going to fly out the window. And, you know, I just can't believe, you know, we waited a really long time. We got home, everything was fine, but how can this be the experience at Union Station? You have a place to sit, you have shelter from the rain, you have a nice station. On the way going back, you have no idea when it's coming. Like there's a timetable that is like a lie, and no place to sit when you've got kids.
You have a timetable that couldn't possibly be anything but a lie, right?
Oh,
like it's impossible to be like,
it's like maybe
a bus coming every 15 minutes.
And then there's the uncertainty, no matter when you show up, did the bus just get there?
Yeah.
Are you going to wait an hour?
Right.
Or you could wait any amount of time and you go, you look at other people and you ask like, did the Hollywood bus come already? And everyone's like, I don't know. I'm not paying attention to your bus.
And then you see one just go by and the guy like waves as he goes by.
Oh,
so
God.
On a holiday weekend, I would think that they would have planned for extra people to want to go home. So it was a little bit troubling. And just again, the unfamily friendly experience of not even considering that people would try to do what we did without a car. Luckily, my kids are great troopers, but it was, you know, took a while to get home.
Hmm. Harrowing travel experiences. Scott.
I mean, at standard at this point, while you guys are globetrotting, I'm here.
That's it. I'm done.
In LA.
get used to me, buddy.
I had a really good first week of the year, very relaxing, no more harrowing furniture stories like last time. I went over to Limley's on the West Side last week, which was nice. Went over to see that movie Cold War, which was good.
The Royal on Santa Monica?
Santa Monica,
yeah.
Which was actually really cool because I hardly ever go over to that side of town at all anymore. And we were there with some friends. We just happened to like the theater just is situated right next to this sushi place. And I was like, oh, we're right over here by Sawtelle. It looks really legit. We went inside and we had this great experience of having to like pass, the sushi chef's personal assessment of us in order to get seated, which was, there's like a line of people waiting.
And what was the place?
It's called Aki Sushi on Santa Monica. And there were some spots at the bar and they weren't continuous and we had a party. So I was kind of wondering, you know, can we get over to where the bar is? Is that open? And he said, well, it's sushi only and... is that okay with you? And I was like, yeah, that's fine with us. And then he goes, okay, he might be all right with it then.
Oh, man.
He disappears and he came back and they did seat us and it was very delicious. I wasn't expecting to have my my caliber assessed like that on the spot. This time I passed, I got my good sushi and...
You're carrying that energy into
2019.
This year.
Yeah, I'm glowing. It's true.
There's a sushi place near there called Bad Sushi, which stands for best and delicious. And I mean, I went there and I found it to be neither of those things. It was just fine. So what happened? I've been gone. Catch me up on what happened this week. I know the big thing is that we're headed for a strike. Garcetti had been promising to jump in and mediate for a little while. And basically the response was no thanks. We're good here. But where are we at with this? And when is the strike happening, if it is happening?
Well, the thing with Garcetti mediating is pretty interesting, because there had been a lot of like early on in this process, earlier, let's say like last fall, there was some talk about Garcetti acting as a mediating force, that he was going to intercede and help act to get the two opposing sides, the union and the school district, on the same side. That kind of never happened, though. And that it was just sort of like being put about by his camp that, hey, I'm available, you know. It was noted by a couple of reporters within the last week or 2 weeks that that nothing had really happened on that front. Claudia Pasciuta of KNX 1070 noted on Twitter that it wasn't really clear whether or not he was doing anything in terms of resolving the contracting dispute. Now we do know that Garcetti that he offered twice and was accepted as a mediator, or the Buettner and his school district allies were okay with him acting as mediator, but the union was not, because they didn't, I suppose, perceive him as a neutral force in that. So they apparently just flat out ignored him. He was not present at the most recent round of contract discussions that happened Monday at the school district headquarters. So LA Taco had this article earlier this week that just kind of was talking about the inability of the two sides to come to an agreement, but also this fact that we have a mayor who has no real authority over what happens in the district, and also his ability to influence the situation has been totally rebuffed.
Yeah. The whole situation between UTLA and the school board has gotten pretty ugly, with the school board suing to try and make UTLA special ed teachers come in and teach during a strike. And there's also something in court about when the strike is actually going to happen. What's going on there?
I think the latest was that it was going to be Thursday, the day this airs. But we don't know. That's pending some other factors now about, I think there has to be some kind of like
advance notice.
Yeah,
or
there needs to be more advance notice than Thursday. I'm not sure exactly how that works.
But then that would only extend it to like the 12th or the 14th,
right,
or something like that.
Yeah.
It's soon, no matter what.
Yeah. So the union has been saying, at least as of, I think shortly after we had our interview with two reps from the UTLA, we actually did get the January 10th date. The union has stuck to that.
Yeah.
The school district has tried to go to courts to stop them from being able to do it that soon. However, as of the time that we're recording this, it's Tuesday night right now. There has been no decision made about, essentially there has been no decision made that would force the union to delay that. So currently it is still on for Thursday.
Right. Okay. Alyssa, you have children that are entering LAUSD, and there was a lot of coverage of the upcoming strike, sort of saying like that this is the teachers are failing the kids by doing this, and they're out for themselves, and the kids are going to be running naked in the streets with no supervision because of this strike. What do you think about that? As a parent, what do you think about this kind
of
thing?
Well, Metro will be free, so at least they can ride the bus around and they won't be naked in the streets. They can take the bus to like the library.
That is an amazing thing that Metro did.
Yeah, I mean, but well, why
but
not?
But why is it free when they're going
not all
to school?
The time?
I agree. But it is it's
but
something
it's
that they
nice of them to step up. Yeah. Yeah, I saw an op-ed that troubled me in the Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal editorial.
A Wall Street Journal editorial about LA's public schools.
You got deep into it.
But it was the same kind of thing. Like if the teachers really cared, they wouldn't do this. And mm-hmm. like, it's the teacher's fault that enrollment's down and they don't have enough money. I mean, I can't believe that this is like the argument that we are hearing. And then a lot of comparisons to the national kind of teacher strike trend, yeah. if you want to call it that. But those are for very different reasons. I think looking at, as was noted in a bunch of stories, those were in like Republican states where yeah. like people are trying to suppress unions. Like this conversation in LA is very different. Like we're supposedly this very maybe pro-union administration and, you know, that recognizes a lot of the problems that we've heard these teachers talking about. And so many of the parents that I've talked to are so supportive of the teacher striking. So I don't know who's trying to float these, you know, counter arguments about like, this is a bad thing that the teachers are right. doing. I mean, I see a lot of support from my fellow parents.
And the basic principle around the strike now is not salary. They've come to an agreement
yeah,
on that.
I mean,
much.
I think
it's not like they're trying to get paid more, which wouldn't be bad if they
yeah,
were.
It wouldn't be the worst thing. And I saw some chart too about, you know, how the pay for LA teachers come in compared to, some of the other local school districts is still, you know, on the low end. And so even the pay argument is a good one, actually, yeah. you know, that's fine, but you're right. Like the bigger things are just these very basic, like student ratios, like that
class
kind
sizes.
Of stuff matters. Yeah. yeah. So
for kids, especially
for kids, the most, I mean, that's what we're yeah. doing this for. So,
yeah. So, I mean, as far as where we're at now, like we said, we're recording this Tuesday night. So this, situation still potentially could change tomorrow during the final day of negotiations, at least before the union intends to go on strike. We also don't know what will happen with the court decision, assuming that there will be one. But where we stand now, like you said, Hayes, there have been, generally speaking, agreements on the raises. The union, I think, is at a little bit higher of a number still, but I don't think that's the major sticking point currently. We do know also that the union, from Howard Bloom at the LA Times, we know that the union has dropped its demand for the union to have say in the use of standardized testing within the district, but they do not feel like the class size reductions that have been offered by the district are sufficient. And they also feel like Buettner and the district have given themselves basically wiggle room that would allow them to revert the changes back to where they currently huh. are after a short period of time. So basically that is the cause now for the continued dispute. I think that and just generally like the broader cultural changes that the union would like to see implemented. It's interesting because I think, like you said, Alyssa, all of the articles that you read, the parents say like, we want these things that the teachers are striking for. A lot of people also say like, we don't know what we're going to do with our kids. I did think that genre of story was particularly interesting. CNN and the LA Times both ran one. But at this point in time, as Garcetti said over a week ago, it does seem like, barring some significant change in the state of affairs, it does seem like a strike is inevitable in the mm-hmm. next day or two.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the state. Let's go to Sacramento. There's a new legislature starting for real. We have a new governor.
What?
And Gavin Newsom, his
Who?
Kid was all... running around during
that was
the
so
ceremony.
Staged,
he's adorable.
Right? But they were like, go up right now when he talks about
yeah.
the house and the family.
They just give him an Adderall.
Gavin Newsom was like, this is totally scripted in a way that was both sarcastic and also likely true simultaneously.
Yeah. And Jerry Brown.
He's got a dog. He's got
he has a dog too. Yeah. yeah. Jerry Brown took his dogs to his ranch. Riding
and
off
they're
into
moving,
the sunset.
They're moving into the governor's mansion, which is a huge deal. So they're moving the family
to Sacramento.
Yeah, they're leaving Marin, which is That's dedication for you.
I'm amazed by that. I didn't even know that was like a big deal.
Me neither. I thought that was like expected.
Didn't Jerry Brown, the first time he was governor, do
like some kind of reno?
Yeah,
right?
he
slept on a mattress. In Sacramento across the street.
He had like a loft or something. It wasn't like that. But then he did renovations because I guess it was in pretty bad shape. So he poured all this money into the governor's mansion to make it livable. And then he moved in. But like Schwarzenegger didn't live there, obviously. We're commuted by jet.
From LA?
From Brentwood.
Oh my God.
And then he crash at a hotel. And then this
Why
was a big question.
Why do we have somebody who's not an extraordinarily wealthy white man?
That would be weird, though. Yeah. That would be
why
so
break the streak,
weird.
You know?
Our great climate governor taking a jet twice a day up and down the state. But let's talk about what Gavin Newsom is going to do. I saw our friend of the show, Liam Dillon, talking about conversations he's had with Newsom and things Newsom has said in the past about housing. He has used the term moonshot for housing, a Marshall Plan for housing, basically implying that he is going to allocate a bunch of money for it. And so we'll talk about that. And also he talked about a path to single payer that he laid out today. But what do we know about what Gavin Newsom is going to do for housing, and when will we know more, basically?
Actually, we might know more as soon as the day that this airs. So as you're saying, Newsom said in his inaugural address that, which was peppered with all sorts of allusions to the state, the state's housing crisis, and the importance of making shelter accessible to all Californians without it being as difficult or as expensive as it is today. He did say that he wanted to have a Marshall Plan for affordable housing. We know from his time on the campaign trail, of course, Liam Dillon and Matt Levin at the California Housing Crisis podcast have covered this extensively. He said that he wanted to have 3.5 million mm-hmm. housing
by 2025. So half a million a year.
Which I think Liam Dillon wrote about in the Times as being something like four times as much as currently.
Yeah, delusional.
So that's, I guess, where moonshot comes from. Right. It's just...
Moonshot is not a great term because we have gone to the moon.
Right.
Like, that was an achievable goal, whereas half a million homes a year, if he could manage that would be incredible, but I don't think it's possible.
It would be a bunch of, like, Tejon Ranch type developments, probably.
He also said back in October that this was not a promise. It was just a...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
It was just like, table dressing, I guess. I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but the term Marshall Plan for me is an interesting one because we've talked a lot on here about bonds for housing and other ways that the state basically just takes a big bag of cash and dumps it on the heads of local governments who are then like, what do we do with this? It's good to have money. But we've already seen like the H and HHH funding, for example, which we were expecting to help construct 10,000 units, now be downgraded to 6,000 units. And it just seems like the money isn't necessarily the problem so much as the other. I think that was one of Brown's big things, right? Was that he wanted to make it cheaper to build affordable housing before he committed to a massive investment of state funds.
Right.
And I don't know from the speech, we don't necessarily know that Newsom is gearing up for that same particular fight. He has made intimations that he wants to drastically increase housing production. Money is maybe not the only barrier there. But again, so today on Thursday, Newsom is going to be releasing his initial budget, his first budget as governor. This is something that was begun with Brown's people back in the fall, but Newsom took it over when during the transition process. So we should get a sense of how he envisions the California Marshall Plan going.
I mean, what's the difference between like a Marshall Plan and a moonshot? Like, which one do we prefer? I mean, I know you're saying that like the moonshot maybe makes it seem like it will be possible. What is a Marshall Plan infer? Because we also hear these things talked about as far as like climate change at the federal level, right? Like mm-hmm. the same,
right?
Like we need to go after this in the same way. So what do we prefer and what do we want? Because I want the one that works.
Marshall Plan to me implies more money for some reason mm-hmm. than the moonshot. To me, what I think you need is before the Marshall Plan, like war mobilization.
Right. Which is also what's been said. Yeah.
Those are the terms that they've been using to talk about the Green New Deal. And I think housing is obviously a huge part of that. Yeah. But yeah, of those two, I think I would prefer a Marshall Plan because I mean, part of what it will take that. Well, this is the thing, because, you know, the Marshall Plan implies like just money dumped all over the problem. But I do think, you know, obviously there have to be some systemic changes as well. If you are just pouring it into the system as it currently exists, you are just wasting state money.
Yeah, I think so. Of the three terms, like Marshall Plan, moonshot, and New Deal, I would say that the sense I get from them, moonshot to me, for some reason, sounds like, even though it is something that we've done in the past, moonshot sounds like something that he doesn't think is achievable.
Right. You might miss it. You shot for it, but you didn't quite get there.
Marshall Plan to me, I mean, so the Marshall Plan, historically, we have the Secretary of State after the U.S. Secretary of State following World War II. Had this big plan to rebuild Europe and cultivate our European alliances by giving out what amounts to, in today's dollars, $100 billion over the course of a couple of years in not just grant funding, but also loans. And we were giving those to sovereign governments, mm-hmm. you know, which is why, to me, it just seems like we're cutting checks as the state of California, we're cutting checks to the counties and the cities that, in my view, at least, are a big part of the problem.
Yeah.
Whereas you had a uniformity of goal in post-war Europe, which was like, everything has been fucking flattened and needs to be rebuilt. There's a very clear uniformity of goal there. Here, there are a lot of incumbent, powerful political entities that benefit from the status quo.
It's like if Germany was saying, stop rebuilding us.
Right, exactly.
Leave Germany flat.
We don't want any density.
So in Western Europe, after World War II, you could easily make the case that, like, you know, the French government just got this big check from Uncle Sam, and now they're going to build social housing. They're going to build public housing. And that's a really easy sell because nobody has anywhere to live and it's freezing mm-hmm. and people are dying. The same thing does not apply in California today. The New Deal is interesting because
it does apply when the people don't have anywhere to live and they're dying.
I'm sorry,
it's just not freezing.
You're right, but not the people who actually control the political structures of the cities and counties.
Right.
The New Deal, which we've heard applied to, of course, with the Green New Deal, we've heard applied to discussions on fighting climate change. The New Deal was a similar mobilization with a large amount of money attached to it, but that was actually federal government agencies that were in charge of the expenditures mm-hmm. and were, so that was much more socialized. So that would almost be my preference. I feel like what you said, Hayes, is completely right. If you just drop big bags of money, that's not the reason why we don't have housing in LA. There are a lot of people who would love to build housing in LA. The issue is that we have landlords and incumbent homeowners who are very successful at gumming up the works. Any program that you have that includes just like giving people money to build housing here, I feel like there's going to be a lot more heat than light in the sense of the excess revenue just going to the existing people who have power.
So one role that could be played in this, which is now that Jerry Brown is not in office anymore, is the redevelopment agencies, which were dissolved by Brown when he came into office. And some people have even said that the reason that a lot of the problems that we are seeing in cities have been so exacerbated are related to housing and development and all these other problems is because those redevelopment agencies were gone. So it's, what if we, like, Newsom brought back those, you know, the CRA and was like allowing some of those to facilitate some of these housing processes. Just putting it out there.
There's already bills.
Just putting it out there.
I think there are two bills. Competing ones. We're going to have to get into that in the future in the legislature.
So that could be that, but that could be that component, I guess, that's missing that might work.
Right? I feel like from my perspective, like the landlord power thing is a major issue. So we've already talked about SB 50. I think that removing the zoning constraint is a big one, especially when you talk about places like the west side of LA, which there's a huge amount of job access there, but you need the ability to actually build something so people can live there. Then there's the Article 34 repeal Hayes, which you've talked about on previous episodes, that potentially could be on the ballot in 2020. That would be a major step towards making something like this Marshall Plan feasible.
And we've talked about it before, but that Article 34 doesn't allow municipalities to build low-income housing without putting it on the ballot first, which means that they just don't do it.
Right.
Let's go to the west side.
Yeah, speaking of the west side.
The West Side Pavilion, your destination to buy a DVD at Barnes & Noble, maybe go over to Aeropostal.
Yeah.
And
I don't think I ever went there.
You didn't go to the Landmark Theaters even?
No.
Speaking of is
that still there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There's a restaurant called the West Side Tavern that I think are maybe the only two things left. Everything
I've never
else
been
is gone.
To that mall.
Nordstrom is gone. Macy's is gone. Speaking of our earlier segment, I remember the first movie I went to see at the Landmark Theaters was Waiting for Superman. And I was like, God, these teachers' unions are really getting away with murder. Anyway, the West Side Pavilion, now. But the reason you go there or very soon will be to work at Google. Google is taking over the West Side Pavilion. Everyone was very scared that it was going to get knocked down and replaced with the dreaded housing.
Right.
But now
just
it turns
Paul
out
Kress was the only one who was scared about that.
But now it turns out it's going to become offices for Google.
So with these delightful renderings.
Want to reenact the scene from Clueless where her best friend, who's all like, cool it, daddy-o, or whatever. He's like the swing guy.
Yes.
Saves Brittany Murphy. You're still out of luck. You still can't do that anymore.
Maybe they'll name a conference room after him or something.
Probably.
That would be amazing.
Probably will. And a self-driving car as well. But yeah, so we're going to have half a million square feet of Google office space on the west side. And it is right.
Apple Pan's going to have to expand.
Oh yeah.
They'll be like acquired as the cafeteria. They'll be like a glass, like pedestrian bridge that goes over to the Apple Pan.
That's good. This is going to be like,
please don't do that. Somebody's going to do that now. Hey,
I can actually already see the requiems for the old Apple Pan being written, even though Google is not set to move in for another 4 years at this point. But
it's so there's a really interesting twist here, I think, which is it's close to an Expo Line station.
Yep.
It's walkable. I hope they will walk to the Expo Line. It really changes.
And not too long a Purple Line station.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, by the time Google will still be around by then, by, you know, 50 years from now when the Purple Line gets done. But again, this issue of like, where are these people going to live? How do we not create the same problems that Google has created in, say, Playa Vista, which, you know, there are places to live there, but it's still created this horrible traffic problem going to Santa Monica. So what is going to happen and can we get them somehow to put the pressure on the area to build some of the housing that the Expo Line plan now is allowing just a little bit more density, but who knows if that'll happen?
It's like the smallest amount more density,
it's like
right?
Two floors.
We did talk a little bit about this. So the Expo Line transit plan, within a half mile of all the Expo Line stations in the city of Los Angeles, we went through and as a city increased the number of housing units that we could put there. However, most of the increases happened at the stations in Mike Bonin's district, and this is unfortunately in Paul Koretz's district. Paul Koretz, council member for CD5, is not a fan of transit or housing or Dubai. He likes things the way they are in Westwood, and this is one of those things where I think it's even different than Playa Vista, because there you could reasonably claim like that was a community that was somewhat out of the way and like more beachy. And this is Westwood. It's in the middle of Rancho Park.
Yeah.
These are $1 million homes around it already. So we need to upzone this area. There's no real way around it. Like there needs to be apartments here. I imagine Google engineers coming in will be able to afford living wherever they want, which will cause some consternation among West Siders, but like, you know.
It's like a mini Amazon HQ coming to Rancho Park.
Well, the interesting thing about this story, like Roger Vincent's story in the LA Times, is that they don't even really talk about how many employees that they're bringing here. It's basically just like staking a claim on the West Side for like a future expansion. They can just afford it. So lock down the real estate now and figure out what you're going to do with it later, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of the HQ2 race. Like
right.
Spending a year and a half, like getting everyone all like riled up about where your offices were going to be. And Google just kind of puts a coming soon sign on a building. And you don't know exactly what their plans are. It's like when they had that barge for a while and no one really knew what they were up to. But this is at Pico and Westwood. We should talk about this story in West Hollywood. Ed Buck, rich guy, major Democratic donor. How did he get his money? Do we know?
You know, I actually am not super sure. I feel like part of it must have just, there was something that I read about him. I believe it was from, WeHoville from the previous time that this happened. We'll get into it in a second. I think that it basically just said that like he managed to put together $250,000 to buy a business back in the late 70s or 80s. So
okay.
Connections of some variety.
A man was found dead in his apartment. This is the second time it's happened in 2 years. Dead, presumably an overdose. That was the cause of death last time. A guy named Jamel Moore was the first victim. We don't know the name of the second victim still, I believe.
Nope, still has not been released.
The extent that, you know, there are all different flavors of sexuality. This man has somewhat deviant sexual tendencies that seem to involve injecting men, in particular black men, with drugs. So yeah. He finds addicts. And he gets them to his apartment. He pays them presumably and gives them drugs. And they have been dying in his place at an alarming rate. And to this point for Jamel Moore, he has seen no repercussions, right?
Yeah. Nothing whatsoever. Basically the previous, incident, Jamel Moore, there were a number of people at the time who called for Jackie Lacey, DA of LA County, who we've discussed as being, famously loath to bring charges against, police officers. She just doesn't do it. In this case, also the district attorney's office did not bring charges, even though there were pages released from Jamel Moore's journal that like while Ed Buck and his representation, his legal representation, were basically claiming that this was somebody who had a drug addiction problem, and Ed Buck did, you know, whatever he could to stop them from going down the wrong path. These journal entries actually seem to indicate, Jamel Moore's journal entry seems to indicate that Ed Buck was responsible for getting him addicted to crystal meth in the first place, and that Jamel Moore believed that it was going to lead to his death. So the at the very least negligent behavior there, people were saying should be enough to merit charges against him, but none were brought, which then subsequently, so we have Jasmine Kanick, who is an activist who is actually running for the Assembly Democrats. She's running to represent basically the Democratic
Party.
As a delegate. She has made this a cause where she is saying that the sheriff's department that polices West Hollywood and the district attorney's office just basically let Ed Buck go because he's a Democratic donor and because...
Including a donor to Jackie Lacey.
Yes.
I believe.
Yes. I believe they said that he made a $100 donation to her back in 2012.
Yeah. Okay. But he also, he's like a known figure in the Stonewall Democratic Club. He ran for West Hollywood City Council a few years ago. But he, yeah, I think it just sort of shows when he obviously feels like he can get away with this stuff and sort of went right back to business.
Yeah.
And now it's happened again.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a Daily Beast article that I think is probably the best one that I've read on this, by Hugo Daniel. And it does seem like there is an element of really predatory behavior, at least as far as the allegations against Ed Buck go, that he finds specifically, like you said, Black men who are have money issues or do not have connections, do not have people who are looking out for them. And he at least allegedly has some sort of fetish about injecting people with addictive substances. There was a statement made by Ed Buck's lawyer that I think is worth hearing, given the seriousness of these charges.
A time friend of Ed's came over, and Ed was reluctant to have him come over. The individual came over, had already been partying, apparently had already taken some substances. There are some individuals in our society who have a huge heart, maybe bigger than what they should have. And they allow individuals to come over when they probably, some of us would not allow them to come over. And then things happen thereafter, not being involved in their death, trying to help them and counsel them to change their ways. But this is what happens.
So that's
too generous.
Yeah, his heart was too big, is the defense. Ed Buck was trying to stop this unnamed individual.
No, that was Jamel Moore, right?
No, that was...
Oh, okay.
That was actually... Yeah, that is the currently unnamed victim.
Okay.
From... Yeah. So this is... that is essentially the defense that they're going with right now, is that Ed Buck was trying to help and counsel the victim, and it's not really syncing up with eyewitness testimonies at the scene. Ed Buck is known as having a lot of people coming in to his house, whether they're friends or sexual partners, but a lot of people come in and out on a daily basis. His neighbors say that they saw the person go in and did not appear to be, they were actually observing, because this had happened with Jamel Moore recently. Mm-hmm. And this individual did not appear to be inebriated at the time that he arrived. So it doesn't seem to match up with the eyewitness accounts.
Let's go back to the mayor. There was a big article this week in The Atlantic about whether or not Garcetti would or should quit his job as mayor if he was going to run for president.
Yeah.
And there were some illuminating quotes in it from Garcetti, basically implying that he will not.
The best one is that he talks about how the size of LA getting around.
That's
how,
my favorite.
How
he said, that's
LA
the wrong
is.
Question. He said, how can you be mayor if you're going to be out of town so much? And he said, that's the wrong question.
Yeah, that's the wrong question. This is like a mini country.
Meaning LA.
Meaning LA. And then he was standing by his car on his way to a groundbreaking ceremony in Sun Valley, blah, blah, blah. And then he said that getting around LA, given its size, can be like traveling between states. It takes me as long as a flight, probably, he said.
So the idea is so stupid to be like, how can you be mayor if you're never going to be in the city, if you're going to be flying from Iowa to New Hampshire to South Carolina? Is already doing that, I guess.
Because you're already going from Sun Valley to the port in a day.
Yeah, that already takes forever.
Yeah.
So what difference?
What difference does it make if I'm here or not?
Here or there.
I mean, I think that, so the comparison of LA County with 10 million people and uncountable number of languages and whatever.
LA City, by the way, that's his domain. He doesn't
just
even,
like
he,
a mini country. That's just like a mini country.
He doesn't have to worry about the North County and stuff.
That is true. He does. I don't know. You're right. He does frequently refer to that as like his brief or whatever. But the comparison of LA, at least county, to a mini country is justifiable. However, running LA City is not like running a country. It might be like observing some other people running a country, but the mayor, like we were just talking about, the mayor doesn't even run the school system here. He doesn't run
right.
the transportation system. He doesn't do any of these things. Like there's not really any way that you can credibly claim that being the mayor of Los Angeles fully prepares you for all of the challenges that you would face as the president of the United States. I don't personally buy it. I don't know. It doesn't really click for me. And also the fact that basically everybody that they talk to in this article, besides Herb Wesson, who said that it doesn't matter if Garcetti's gone or not.
Yeah, that was
a great quote, too.
What was that quote? What did he say?
He goes, one of the reasons the mayor can freely travel, because he is the face of this great city, is because the council gets things done and there is constant communication. So basically he was saying, next part. Don't leave out the next part. If he were gone for 30 days, based on the level of communication, based on the relationships between the mayor and the council, this city would get on without a hitch in its giddy up.
What? That's an ethering to me. Imagine someone saying about you, if you disappeared for a month, nothing would change.
He basically said, be sure to write. Herb Wesson, council president,
basically,
just said that the city does not require Garcetti's presence as mayor to do anything, really.
But we've talked about this a million times. Like he's playing two games at once in his campaign, which is mayors get things done. Mayors do the practical stuff on the ground, the executive governance that is
right.
the best preparation for the presidency. It's a more important job than being a senator or representative where you just vote or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, he's saying, I can work remotely. It's like that you just like sign up for a job and you're like, by the way, I have this vacation planned already. So I am going to need this month off. And like, you know, it's like my commute is already so long that why don't you just let me work from wherever I want? Like,
he said in this day and age, you can be mayor anywhere. He said, he did say
which
that.
Is
I mean, I'm not really sure I agree with that at all, or that I would want that on my Ready for Garcetti t-shirt that I've ordered.
You know, other than Wesson, nobody who they talk to a number of different people, both people relatively, I think, more favorable of Garcetti and relatively, at least historically, people who have worked with basically political opponents of his. And nobody seems to think that this is something that you could actually do, be right. campaigning for real for president of the United States and also running a major American city, in particular Los Angeles. But I think we also have to just kind of this is just kind of who Garcetti is.
Right.
He finishes out the article saying, if tomorrow I decide not to run for president, I'm still going to be on the road as much as I have for the last 5 years because what happens in this country influences my city. So he's basically just saying that this is me, you know, like
right.
this is what I'm doing. And if you don't like it, well, he's already been reelected, so it doesn't really matter.
Then at least I don't love how being the mayor of one of these world cities involves just like traveling to Sao Paulo or whatever all the time to like do these trade initiatives or that kind of thing.
Right.
But at least then you're representing the city and not yourself.
Exactly.
There is like a fundamental difference in the purpose of the travel that he would be doing. There's an interesting story near the end of the article where he talks about he jokes that he's thinking about making his staff t-shirt or giving his staff for Christmas t-shirts listing all of his accomplishments. I believe that was kind of like a self-effacing joke, but listing the accomplishments, the first one is raising the minimum wage. And that did sort of take me back to the very beginning of his first term where he did really come out in favor of raising the minimum wage. He was like, he put his face on it. There was a lot of resistance from the business community and like restaurants in the city. But he fought really hard. Like I remember associating him really strongly with that push. And obviously there were tons of other right. groups behind it as well, but he kind of led the charge and he made sure it succeeded. And that was kind of the last time I remember something like that happening. Do you know, is that consistent with your memory of
I mean, I forgot
that
about that until
Measure,
you brought it
Measure
up.
Measure M was the last
oh, yeah,
thing that
right.
I remember him pushing,
that's
which
right.
is mentioned in here as an infrastructure bond.
Oh, yeah. I saw that and I was like, I don't remember that. What does that even mean? Okay, that's Measure M. Yes, he did. He was really behind Measure M.
That
and,
is the last really thing
and,
that I remember.
And no on S, he...
And now the Olympics.
He went up for it. And since then, it's been the Olympics, yeah. Boy, oh boy. What a thing.
I do have to wonder whether or not in some... You know, I do like I wonder whether or not in some way, shape or form, this article helps him lay the groundwork for resigning in the event that he the very likely event that he says that he is going to run for president. The overwhelming response that this is not a job that you can do while you're running for president. I think Garcetti as a natural like as a people pleaser, I feel like. It can't be an easy decision for him to make to not finish his two terms in office.
Yeah.
So I just kind of wonder, like, if this lays like that.
So does
case
that make
down for him?
Herb Wesson, mayor, and is that why he's saying?
Herb Wesson has said
off
that
with
he's,
that
he's
hitch.
running for supervisor.
Yeah, but he's just saying that. He's like, go run for president. I got this.
The House of Cards.
He would sort of be, I mean, with the mayor out of town, he would sort of be de facto mayor
is
to
that
the
how
extent
works?
That he isn't already.
Is
I mean, no.
Special election for sure. Right?
I mean, like, shadow mayor.
Shadow mayor, right.
You know, while Garcetti's out of town.
I mean, he's basically shadow mayor
yeah,
every day.
Yes, that's right.
but there would be an election. See, I don't know if I want to go through that.
You don't really have a choice, though.
I mean, I don't think Garcetti. Are you saying that Garcetti is intentionally laying the groundwork to be able to step down?
No,
I don't think
not
he,
necessarily.
I don't think he wants to. I think he really wants to hang on to the job. Genuinely feels that he can. And seems to think that it's kind of a figurehead position or where you just like travel around the world talking about the airport and like, you know, like shiny new things about the city. But I think he would like to do it all, raise his profile running for president, stay mayor, graduate from his second term and then go on to whatever new job awaits him from all the goodwill and fundraising apparatus he's created through this campaign. That seems to me to be the goal. It's, and maybe like win the presidency by accident.
It seems to me like if he decides to run, if he actually thinks that he has a real shot of getting the Democratic Party nomination, I assume that he has people in his ear telling him that that is a real possibility, no matter how unlikely it seems to me personally. I don't get paid to do that, frankly. So I will defer to them, I suppose. But it seems to me if he is in a position where he is running for the Democratic Party nomination, he opens himself up unnecessarily to a lot of deadweight baggage on himself by keeping the position. We're talking today right. about one of the largest teachers unions in the country yeah. flat out saying, we reject the notion that you have the influence to successfully broker a deal between us and the LA Unified School District. So again, to the notion that he is basically running a country already, he's not. And the more he's in the national spotlight, the more obvious that will become as major political players within Los Angeles get the sense that he is an absentee mayor and start just going around him. You know, everybody's going to, you know, no hitch in the giddy up. Everybody's just going to go around him. And that will, I think, look pretty embarrassing on a national stage.
Yeah. Even if he does, I mean, if he doesn't run at this point, it seems like he's mortgaged a huge amount of goodwill and credibility, but it really tells you something about how LA politics works. Compared to San Francisco, imagine the mayor of San Francisco is out of town, whatever, 3 months out of the year, is entertaining a run for president. If she's gone that mm-hmm. amount of time, the knives are out immediately for her. Yep. Half of the county supervisors are threatening to seize power while she's gone. I mean, there would be just mayhem. I can't think of a single council member, any kind of a local politician, who has said a thing to the effect of, there's a lot going on in the city and the mayor should probably be in town for it. Like you're saying, the teachers are about to walk out. Yep. The homeless crisis is as bad as it's ever been, really. These are things that a mayor should be present for, if only to feign interest and sincerity about right. and to get people motivated to change it. Have you heard one person say that?
I haven't heard any commentary to the effect that Garcetti should be here for all of this.
In fact, instead we have the head of the city council saying, oh, well, go. It's fine.
You've
been gone?
I mean, San Francisco is different. I mean, every day is
but other places must be like that.
Every yeah. day is like the Ides of March there. Yeah. But basically, I do feel like... I would expect there to be pressure for the top executive of a city to be present. Maybe everybody just feels really confident that he is doing his job to the fullest that anybody could expect him to, or maybe there's just not that much for him to do, which is kind of that's where it's dangerous politically. It just doesn't sound like he's that useful or necessary.
Weak mayor? I don't know. I don't know.
It is part of it is structural.
It's not really his fault.
But it's
maybe.
What I do think it's kind of what you make of it. If you are a figurehead, then be a good one.
Right.
You know, show up, be out in front of stuff, be a good advocate for the city and the kind of changes that you want to see happen. Like you're saying with Measure M.
Right.
Like that was something that you could say that he helped make.
He pushed very hard for yes. Measure M.
Putting yourself on the line. I mean, I'm thinking of more that you've got me. I mean, we do have an earthquake early warning app now, thanks to the mayor.
That is true.
Yes, that's right. And that leads to big media appearances for Alyssa Walker.
We don't actually know how it works, though, which is really interesting. There's no demos of what it will do when it happens. So I think a lot of these people are just signing up for it. And
there's no demos.
I signed up.
There's a video that's like, hi, I'm Eric Garcetti. Here's an early warning app for your earthquake.
Oh, yeah. It's from his office.
Yeah, it's from his office. And I'm sure it's great. I'm sure they made it and everything. But it's just kind of an interesting. It's another one of those things that's like, it's something that he's put his name on. It's probably going to be a really big thing. It got a lot of attention and press. But as far as the next step, or what happens next, or it's the 25th anniversary of Northridge, maybe we'll hear more about it, you know, coming up next week or something. But again, it's an idea of like follow through, where you're just right. Kind of like, okay, so now what happens? Everybody signs up for this app, but like, we need resiliency beyond just this app and some leadership to maybe get our transportation network, you know, up to par for when the earthquake happens. So things like
that. For people who don't know, if you want to download this app, you should if you live in the city, you can search in the app store Shake Alert LA, one word, and that's how you'll find it. Great. Thanks, guys. Thank you for catching me up.
Welcome back.
Welcome back.
Thank you. We'll be back on Monday for our next episode of LA Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. Happy New Year. Bye.